Thanks, everybody, for listening to the KBOO Evening News. My name's Sam Bowman.
And I'm Jasmine Moneymaker. Welcome to a special pledge drive edition of Totality of Circumstances. The theme of this pledge drive is Mike to the People, and we're going to talk about one of the obstacles to the democratic process functioning in Portland, and that is a little something called the police association contract, or the collective bargaining agreement.
We will not be able to fully change the responsibility of holding officers accountable until we change this contract. There's an anti-democratic force here within this contract that allows officers to get away with things that average citizens cannot get away.
That was Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes speaking at a press conference earlier this month that announced the formation of a coalition aimed at making sure community concerns stay at the forefront of upcoming contract negotiations between the City of Portland and the Portland Police Association. Reverend Haynes is a member of the Albina Ministerial Alliance for Justice and Police Reform, or AMAC. That group is among 15 local civil rights and faith-based organizations that have signed on to this proposal that is going to be presented to City Council. One of the group's major concerns is increasing officer accountability, and especially the concept of fairness or justice within the accountability system. The limitations of that were revealed in a case that went before City Council earlier this year involving now former Portland police officer Greg Lewis. For those of you who need a refresher, Lewis was a sergeant at Central Precinct, and in February of 2017, just 3 days after police shot and killed Quanis Hayes, Lewis was telling a group of officers about placing civil holds on intoxicated people when he said something so disturbing that his fellow officers remarked on it at the time, reported it to their superiors, and the Professional Standards Division got involved. We don't know exactly what he said because it's all sort of hearsay, but this is how Joanne Hardesty reported it at the City Council hearing.
If you run into a drunk on the street who's white in a suit, let him go because he'll probably sue you. If it's Latino, call chairs. If he's black, shoot him. That is what the officer said.
So the Lewis case made its way through the normal discipline channels, and in January 2018, Lewis was officially terminated for a violation of PPB directives on professional conduct and bias-based policing. However, with the help of the police union, Lewis appealed his termination, and in January of this year, his case made it to City Council to vote on a settlement that would allow him to retire with a full pension and $100,000 in back pay if he would agree to never work for the police or the City of Portland again. That settlement was approved by the council, due in large part to fears that they would lose even more if they went to an arbitrator.
The chance that this will go to an arbitrator and then be overturned, I believe, is too great. And therefore, I am of the opinion that we should take the settlement agreement. At the end of the day, if the Portland Police Association chooses to dispute the outcome of the termination, it goes before an arbitrator. So it isn't the mayor, and it is not the police chief who make the final determination as to whether or not this individual should continue to be employed by the City of Portland. It is up to an arbitrator. And history has shown that arbitrators do not always agree with the mayor and the police chief.
The Portland Police Association's first collective bargaining agreement, or CBA, was signed in 1970. The first CBA included binding arbitration for grievances, a policy that, while common in labor agreements, has led to some of the most controversial and confounding moments in the recent history of Portland policing. In March 1981, Portland officers Craig Ward and Jim Galloway dumped four dead possums on the front steps of the Burger Barn, a black-owned restaurant in Albina. The incident outraged the city. Charles Jordan, the city's first black city council member and commissioner of police, announced about 2 weeks later that Ward and Galloway had been fired. You can hear both Jordan's announcement and Black United Front leader Ron Herndon's reaction in this contemporary clip from KATU-TV.
On the disciplinary action to be taken, and it was not a very easy task, and our decision was unanimous that these officers will be terminated.
The reaction from black leaders to this morning's decision was swift.
I think it's too little, too late. We still see absolutely no reason why it took 2 weeks to terminate two officers who admitted being responsible for probably one of the most blatant acts of racism this community has ever seen.
The Portland Police Association's response to the firing is what really put it on the map of Portland politics. The union's then president, Stan Peters, demanded binding arbitration over the firings and took to every mainstream media outlet to voice the PPA's displeasure.
The commissioner is the one that said the Black United Front, Herndon, Broussard, the whole bunch of them take advantage of this situation and come screaming around marching City Hall carrying pigs on a stick and that kind of nonsense. There's nothing legitimate in that kind of a march.
Peters actually held his own march, in which hundreds of cops and their supporters encircled City Hall, and Ward and Galloway were brought up on stage for an ovation that lasted a full minute. When the arbitrator handed down his ruling that summer, Ward and Galloway got their jobs back. According to the Oregonian, the arbitrator found their actions to be, quote, offensive and stupid, unquote, but also that there was, quote, not a scintilla of evidence to suggest the possum dumping was racially motivated. In 1985, grievance arbitration again overturned the firing of officers for outrageous behavior that much of the city recognized as racist.
The whole situation is sick.
I think it's terrible, and I can't believe that people in Portland would feel that way.
I just think that it was extremely tasteless.
Those are Portlanders interviewed in 1985 by KBOO volunteer reporters following the killing of a black man named Lloyd Stevenson by Portland officer Gary Barber. Barber and his partner responded to a shoplifting call at a 7-Eleven store on Northeast Widler and saw Stevenson in an argument with two other men outside. In the words of witnesses who spoke to the Oregonian, quote, "They just jumped on him. He didn't have a chance," unquote. Barber used a so-called sleeper hold on Stevenson, from which he never woke up. Stevenson was an honorably discharged Marine, a security guard, and a father of five. He also wasn't the shoplifter. The incident infuriated Portlanders again. A contemporary KBOO News broadcast covered a major demonstration outside of City Hall.
The demonstrators marched around the Justice Center twice, and then to the steps of the City Hall. Ron Herndon of the Black United Front spoke.
"Ain't gonna be no cover-up this time! Ain't gonna be no whitewash this time! No nonsense this time! Ain't gonna be no talk about it was an accident!
A public inquest was held into Stevenson's death, but a grand jury declined to prosecute Barber. Meanwhile, the Bureau decided to ban the use of the sleeper or carotid neck hold. On the day of Stevenson's funeral, two cops named Monty and Wickersham had the bright idea of making t-shirts that read, "Don't choke 'em, smoke 'em," which they then sold to other cops. Monty and Wickersham, through the mouthpiece of PPA President Stan Peters and the union's lawyers, said they meant it as a dig at the ban on the sleeper hold. The joke was lost on nearly everybody, most of whom just saw callous racism, an attitude captured by KBOO volunteers as they spoke with everyday Portlanders.
"I think the t-shirts is just in very poor taste. I hope that those, if there are more than one policeman, they'll be disciplined. I think they deserve it."
"Yeah, I think the cops ought to be booted off the police force, to tell you the truth, anybody involved with it."
"Well, that incident just shows you once again what Portland's all about the racism that is here, that is not so subtle. And again, we'll see this played out until we're willing to face it in some kind of straightforward way."
Chief Penny Harrington fired Monty and Wickersham. Cue Union President Stan Peters, who immediately told the Oregonian that the firings would undoubtedly be overturned by a third party. The union's case repeated the officers' explanations for their sick joke, but the real kicker was this. The union's lead lawyer, Will Aitchison, who quite literally wrote the book on public safety labor arbitration, argued to the arbitrator that because the t-shirts had not caused quite as much public outrage as the possum incident, and because Ward and Galloway were not fired for their sick joke 4 years earlier, there was no precedent for firing Monty and Wickersham. The arbitrator reinstated them. That precedent looms over the prospect of arbitration like the clouds over Portland, and helps explain why the city is so afraid to stand firm on decisions like the firing of Greg Lewis. Oh, and in case you're wondering what happened to the cop who killed Lloyd Stevenson, Gary Barber retired with full benefits in 2011, 26 years after choking an innocent man to death. Sometimes the progress of police accountability in Portland feels like a roll call of tragic events. The shooting death of Kendra James in 2003 by Officer Scott McAllister prompted the Albina Ministerial Alliance to form its police reform coalition. Since then, there have been over 40 deaths in the custody or at the hands of members of the Portland Police Bureau, many of which passed through the news cycle with little public outcry beyond loved ones and police reformers. In 2006, the community was outraged again when a couple of beat cops tackled, tasered, and hogtied James Chassie for suspicion of public urination. Chassie died of internal injuries in the back of their patrol car. Officers Kyle Nice and Christopher Humphreys were suspended for 80 days without pay, not for killing Chassie, but for violating a PPB taser policy. Even so, an arbitrator ordered their disciplinary letters to be removed from their files and back pay returned to them. Kyle Nice retired in March of this year and is no longer on the force. Humphreys went on to become the sheriff of Wheeler County. In 2010, Portland police officers responded to a welfare check on Aaron Campbell, who was distraught at the death of his brother earlier that day and experiencing suicidal ideation. Officer Ron Frashauer shot Campbell in the back with an AR-15, killing him. Frashauer was fired, but it didn't stick. After 6 years of arbitration and appeals, Frashauer was reinstated with back pay and is still a member of the Bureau. This is Amanda Fritz speaking to that circumstance ahead of her vote in the Greg Lewis case.
We had a case in my first term where an officer who had killed somebody was fired. And the arbitration said that he had to be reinstated. And we appealed that and we lost. And so that officer is now on the force, wearing a Portland Police Bureau uniform and out on the streets at times. And I cannot in good conscience let that happen again. So I am voting to give good taxpayers' money to this person to go away and stay away, because otherwise he will be on our police force, continuing to acquire more pension funds, continuing maybe to do things which we find reprehensible. Bye.
So where are we now? The current contract between the PPA and the city went into effect in November of 2017 after being rushed through by lame duck Mayor Charlie Hales in October of 2016. Police reform activists held demonstrations at City Hall, in response to which Mayor Hales closed the session to the public and held the final vote in a meeting room upstairs that had already been fitted out with cameras. Among the community concerns were how the city would pay for a 9% across-the-board pay raise for rank-and-file officers. Then there was the body cam policy that Hales had negotiated with the union behind closed doors. The draft policy allowed officers to view camera footage before writing reports and prohibited supervisors from performing random audits of the footage. The 2016 contract also created the Retire Rehire program that allows officers to retire and start drawing pensions and then return to work for the Bureau at their top pay bracket. Amanda Fritz spoke to her faith in Bureau brass to rehire good people.
I find it unbelievable that any chief appointed by the mayor as the commissioner in charge of the Bureau would invite criticism by hiring back officers who are not trusted by the community.
Fritz and Commissioner Nick Fish voted with Mayor Hales to adopt the contract. They argued that hiring incentives were crucial to ensure public safety in the face of those staffing shortages. They also claimed victory in eliminating the notorious 48-hour rule that allowed officers to put off interviews after deadly force cases for 48 hours.
Some have questioned the cost of this agreement. I am more concerned about the cost of doing nothing. The alternative to approving this contract is unacceptable to me. It could be years before we get a new contract. The 48-hour rule would still be in effect, and there's no guarantee that we'll get a better deal in the future.
So how did that shake out? Well, the 48-hour rule was stricken from the contract, but is still effectively in place because District Attorney Rod Underhill has instructed his deputies that cases involving compelled testimony can't be prosecuted. As to the recruitment crisis, at the time of the 2016 vote, there were 65 unfilled patrol positions and average call times were in the 6-minute range. Now there are over 120 unfilled positions, and average call response times are over 8 minutes. Chief Outlaw recently announced a lowering of hiring standards around education and personal hygiene that she's hoping will encourage more candidates to apply. And as for the body cam policy, after significant pushback from the community, the National Lawyers Guild, the ACLU, and the Justice Department, Mayor Hales kicked the body cam can down the road where it rattled around the Wheeler administration before being put on definite hold. It may come up during this round of negotiations. And the retire-rehire program? Well, that's how Greg Lewis ended up back on the force.
So we've got a little history there. So what do you think we can expect from this new round of negotiations? The community has laid out their concerns pretty clearly, and they've been consistent for decades now, which is increased civilian oversight and accountability. The community has their concerns. And then as far as the city council is concerned, we can kind of look back at the 2016 negotiations, which were super contentious. Nick Fish and Amanda Fritz are the only current commissioners who were on the council for that vote, and both of them voted in favor of the contract that Hales negotiated.
A big thing that we talked about today was the binding arbitration. From where I'm sitting, I don't think that's going to change at all. That's just such a fixture.
I don't think it's likely to change because, like you say, it is so entrenched. But with the exception of Nick Fish, everybody, when the Lewis thing went to city council, all the commissioners had something to say about collective bargaining and the community as well. And so that was something that Amanda Fritz mentioned in the 2016 negotiations or the 2016 vote. She said, you know, the community is upset that changes to the arbitration procedure haven't been included in this contract, but, you know, we can't hold everything up for that. And I would be curious to see if the Lewis vote and other things that have stacked up since then are going to change her mind about that a little bit and maybe make it something she wants to push for.
There's also questions about what the majority is going to be on council this time. I think that there are two kind of wild cards. Commissioner Hardesty, who has been a longtime police reform advocate and activist. And there's Chloe Udaly, who is definitely populist commissioner, but she's also proven to be something of a pragmatist, especially, you know, kind of learning the ropes of City Hall and...
Exactly. She's not the most politically savvy commissioner. She didn't have a background in politics really before she entered the city council. And so she is definitely one that my guess would be that if there is something of a coalition that develops, like, say, between Fritz and Hardesty, if they can put something together, I would certainly imagine Udaly joining on with them, but I doubt she's going to blaze any trails on her own.
Mm. And I think that Ted Wheeler is probably a solid union vote on this particular topic, given his stances over the past year or two.
Ted Wheeler for sure, and Nick Fish also is like a Law and Order guy who really believes in, like, you know, concepts of community proactive policing and thinks, you know, takes public safety as a big concern. So those are probably going to be some of the more conservative voices on the council around that. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the transparency thing plays out, if how involved the public is allowed to be in these negotiations, how much we're allowed to know about, how much we're allowed to say, how our input matters.
And I think that no matter what the public is allowed to contribute to this process, the public is going to contribute to this process if the press conferences we've been to have been any indication. And so there's a lot of groups who are lining up to weigh in on this police contract. So looking ahead to next week, we're going to have an interview with the group DA for the People. The Oregon branch of that group, they're hoping to fill some vacant DA seats, including the Multnomah County District Attorney Rod Underhill, who's retiring. And they're hoping to fill them with more reform-minded candidates. And so I'm sure that will be a very robust discussion in 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And in the meantime, we want to hear from you all out there. What is on your mind as the contract negotiations come up? Are you most concerned with oversight, civilian oversight, accountability issues? One of the big things that came up in the coalition letter was mandatory drug testing after force events. Is that something that's important to you? Let us know. Our email address is totalityradio@gmail.com.
Thank you so much for listening.
And thank you for your support of KABU.